Welcome to a special episode of The Punt, one of my favourite episodes biannually, where we unpack a particular carnival. This time it's the Autumn Carnival. Dano, welcome, mate. Always great to have you in here.
Thanks. Good to be here. Bit wet outside, but
it's horrible out there, isn't it? Shocking. Winter's kicking in and not very nice at all. And the bull's on today as well, so it looks pretty cold and chilly down there.
Carnival, nice and warm in the den though.
Yeah. But so I'm probably a little bit biased because it's my job to watch and, you know, learn about all these races and find out as much as I can. But I thought it was a pretty outstanding Autumn Carnival. It was a little bit slow to get going, but then it really did get going. We had obviously the excitement around Stormboy, which we'll talk about.
Yep.
Pride of Jenny really smashed things apart for everybody. Mm. Celestial Legend emerged as a real racehorse. So there's a lot to talk about. What was your feeling about the Autumn Carnival?
Yeah, look, I mean, carnivals are always great. I mean, as usual, the horses are the stars of the show, I think, and every carnival, different stories emerge. This, as you said, Celestial Legend, Pride of Jenny, come off the spring carnival where she was really good, but probably went to a new level, at least in terms of the excitement that she generated and the storytelling around that. We saw some unexpected sort of results in sort of the two-year-olds, a couple of nice two-year-olds emerge late. And it sets up for the spring. I mean, it's great.
Yeah. So I just wanted to start quickly talking about your ratings. Your ratings come out on Monday and they're very popular, and it's a good way for people to get a bit of an understanding as for how a horse that they backed or didn't back ran and where it sort of rated. And just a quick question so people can sort of understand your ratings, and I don't know the answer to this myself, but we're going to watch the Golden Slipper in a second. So Lady of Camelot, right? She ran 103 in the Slipper, right?
Yep.
But if she was to run in a midweek meeting at Canterbury, and let's just say for hypothetically she ran just as fast, she ran just as good a race, is it impossible for her to achieve 103 rating because the benchmark rating for a midweek Canterbury race would never let her get that high? Is that how it all works?
No. So, I mean, ratings are just a numerical way to measure like a horse's performance, right? It's sort of beaten margin in a certain strength of race. So the higher the number, the better the performance, obviously. Lots of people do ratings and have done for decades with different methods. For me, it starts out, you're trying to assess the strength of a race.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things like overall time, sectionals, different algorithms around that, margin spread through the field, key chances, what their previous form and ratings were, what the expected performance or starting prices were of those key horses. So different algorithms and processes in place, lots of cross checks and balances to get an idea of what the strength of a particular race was.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my case, I'm adjusting for beaten margin and then weight carried relative to weight for age for that horse. Or my version of the weight for age scale, which is pretty close to the official, with some differences for two-year-olds and three-year-olds. So what that allows me to do is, in the case you said Lady of Camelot runs a 103, that's essentially a figure at weight for age. So we can say if she's a 103 and another horse is 102, that if they theoretically met at weight for age, then she would have an edge, at least based on the performance that she ran. What it allows you to do is just get some clarity and confidence around the assessment of horses. Obviously, within each run or rating, there's context. So how fit was a horse, how suitable was the distance, the pace, the track condition, all of those type of things. So it's just one measure and way of looking at horses. But when you get enough data points and you assess enough horses across a long enough period of time, it starts to provide a sort of picture where you can cross-reference horses and get a feel for where they sit in the population in terms of their level of talent. And then also look back at history of similar horses and what they went on to do, what percentage went on to be, you know, group one horses, what percentage fell by the wayside and things like that. So it's just a numerical way to try and understand the horse population, their level of talent and how they go each run.
Okay, super interesting. So we're going to start with the two-year-olds and it's actually a really interesting race to talk about rating. So we'll hit the Golden Slipper here.
And Switzerland in the middle of the ruck.
Into the straight. Shangalar Express
just in front of Straight Chart. Going up the inside, Folly Lit and Stormboy. Lady of Camelot behind them, three lengths away to Switzerland. And wide out, Coleman running on.
Stormboy's
got the run on the inside. Coleman wide out with Lady of Camelot. It's Coleman, Lady of Camelot.
Coleman head in front to Lady of Camelot.
Coleman, Lady of Camelot. The lady dives and Lady of Camelot got
the first seven horses, I think it was. Whereas, you know, since 2010, the median's been closer to five lengths. So what that means is that I guess there was more horses this year within a narrower margin at the finish. So it was not only on that measure, but all the other steps in the process, like a slightly below average rating slipper. That doesn't necessarily always directly translate to what these horses will do as three-year-olds. It's just a measure of what they actually did on this particular day.
So before the slipper and after Magic Millions, obviously there was a huge hype around Storm Boy. Mm. We were all saying, me included, this is an exceptional bunch of two-year-olds. In hindsight, maybe it wasn't as exceptional as we thought.
I think in the case of Storm Boy, I mean, there's no fluke with what he did at the Magic Millions, right? As I said, I've probably assessed over 30,000 two-year-olds using the same method that I do now. And there's very clear benchmarks established what two-year-olds do and can do. In his case, you know, his measures on the clock against a proven group class sprinter in King of Sparta, you know, told you a lot about his performance on that day. There's no doubt that it was elite. Mm-hmm. He came off that, regressed in his rating when he won, I think it was the Silver Slipper maybe. And it looked like he'd sort of set himself a range of that as a platform and then he could go high back towards that Magic Million. He didn't do that. Maybe he was over the top. You know, horses aren't machines. Mm. But, yeah, there's no doubt what he did in the Magic Millions day was an absolute elite performance. I remember all the way back 2009, Black Caviar debuted 1,000 metres up the Flemington Straight, ran slightly faster time and faster sectional than the other 1,000 metre race, which was an open, high prize money open race, won by a horse called Secret Flyer, who had won an open handicap by four lengths and a listed race by four lengths and was a pretty decent sort of open class sprinter. So they're the sort of benchmarks that you see. Now, obviously, at the time, Black Caviar rated extremely highly. He couldn't have predicted she would go on to do what she would do. But they're the type of benchmarks that I'm talking about, that when two-year-olds hit those benchmarks, you know it's an elite performance. Obviously, they're not machines. And who knows what the situation was with Storm Boy. We'll see if he can get back to that level as a three-year-old.
Do you think he can? Do you think he's more than likely will win a Group 1? Or do you think maybe he's...
Look, I think he's got every chance to win a Group 1. I mean, I think that it's entirely possible that by the time the Sydney Autumn came around that he was a little bit over the top and perhaps on the way down, not on the way up. And, yeah, but as I said, you keep coming back to what he did there on Magic Millions Day. You can't fluke that. The horse has an engine.
Yep.
A lot has to go right for horses to return as three-year-olds and win Group 1 races, but he's got a big engine, that horse. So hopefully for racing benefit, we can see him do it. Yeah, it did seem like an exceptional crop. We had him. We had Switzerland who emerged. Yep. We had Straight Charger and a good rating. Espionage was showing promise. They were all colts, and it looked like an autumn where the colts were going to dominate. But we actually saw the opposite, where a filly won the Blue Diamond.
Filly won the size, which we're about to watch.
Yep, filly won the slipper out of the Blue Diamond. Coleman came out of the Blue Diamond, ran second in the slipper, I think it was. We saw... Yeah, Philly win the size. So, yeah, it took us, you know, a little bit by surprise. I don't think anyone would have predicted, you know, let's say 8 weeks before the Golden Slipper that the Phillies would dominate. But that's racing. That's the uncertainty of it. And you always have to remain flexible with how you're looking at things and not get too fixed on any one view. You just take each run as it comes. And every week, every race can change the landscape. That's why it's important to look at the races objectively and just assess them for what they are on that day. Yeah.
Right, let's roll to the size where Storm Boy was in this race again. Had a pretty hard run, but was very disappointing in the straight. You can see him looming up there in the Coolmore Blue with J-Mac on board. And we've got Manal out in the clouds.
Yeah, I mean, she made great improvement, won the gym track, rated okay, but then just come back and just kept elevating in the autumn. She was a flashing light run from the slipper. I know all your boys here in the den were bigging on her in this race, and she just kept coming and driving to the line. You know, she's so honest and reliable, running, you know, decent two-year-old ratings. I wouldn't say elite, but certainly decent. And, yeah, got a well-deserved Group 1 win for her connections and sire to sort. Yeah.
Traffic Warden emerges here. He obviously won the size produce down in Victoria. Mm. People thought it wasn't a great form race, but he's shown that's – it's a really strong form race. That's the last we saw of him, wasn't it, for this preparation?
Yeah, he bled in that race, so he's out for 3 months, which is not a big deal. Plenty of horses come back well from bleeding attacks. Yeah, he went on a nice upward trajectory. He'll probably be thereabouts in some of those spring races. If there is a little bit of a query, he had like seven starts as a two-year-old in two preps, so he's pretty well exposed now. You know, in his favour is that he has been increasing his ratings recently. So, yeah, he'll turn up in the spring and I'm sure he'll be put on a path, probably like Golden Rose down for Caulfield Guineas sort of type of path, and yeah, he'll be sort of in the mix there.
But you've got broadsiding maybe a level above him?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. We can,
we'll talk about broadsiding in a second. Yeah. Just before we close the size produce off, on the same day, Espionage raced, which you mentioned before. So he ran a 99, which is slightly better than what Manar Run. Obviously, the race he ran that day, I think, was 1,100 metres.
Yeah, Kindergarten Stakes, 1,100. Yep.
Yeah. So my question is, he didn't make the slipper. He won the Breeders' Plate. Do Racing New South Wales need to have a look at the qualification for the slipper when you've got a horse like Espionage not making the race even after winning the Breeders' Plate?
Yeah, it raises an important point. I mean, everyone knows the qualifications for the race beforehand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was within the power of the stable and connections if they thought, you know, they might be sort of line ball. There was a couple of races there where he could have gone better and earned more prize money. Maybe he would have gotten in. But what I think is interesting is that there is a bit of a trend of less two-year-olds racing before Christmas now. Stables seem to be holding them back a little bit. And if Racing New South Wales want to encourage that racing pre-Christmas to sort of bring that in, then maybe they do need to offer some additional things like, you know, Breeders' Plate or Gimcrack Stakes winners are straight into the Golden Slipper. They're like exempt from ballot.
Yeah.
So it does encourage those two-year-olds to perhaps step out before Christmas, win a race like that, and then they can be put away and sort of managed, you know, more conservatively or properly, specifically targeted, knowing that they're in the Golden Slipper. So, yeah, it's one thing they could probably look at. Yeah.
All right, let's roll to the Champagne Stakes. I was actually out here on the day. Got Linebacker, really improving horse. And then also we've got Broadsiding, who, there's a huge amount of money for him. We've got Manala as well in the green and the white, which was favoured, but obviously it was a horrible, horrible track. They called the day off another race after this.
It was a great win, Broadsiding. I mean, he wasn't suited by the speed. They went quite slowly to the 800. He was back there in the field. They were throwing up some massive clods of dirt, so he had all that happening in front of him. And he still come through the gap and ran to the line, really strong chase. It was a very similar scenario in his Fernhill Stakes win 7 days before, just showing this really strong substance at the end of 1600. So I think that, you know, highlights him as a horse going forward into the spring that has got quite a bit of scope to develop into a good three-year-old.
Yes.
Often with two-year-olds, we see these sort of really, you know, precocious sprinting types that are early maturers and they're perhaps going well because they've got a maturity advantage over some of the others. And then you see the two-year-olds that, you know, have a bit more strength and depth and sort of substance and appeal as the types that are just taking a little bit longer to sort of build to their peak. And he definitely sort of profiles as that type of horse. So, yeah, I think he's got good prospects to be, you know, one of the top three-year-olds. I'm sure he'll come back, you know, probably head towards Golden Rose, Caulfield Guineas, and then potentially like a Cox Plate as a three-year-old if he runs well enough in the Caulfield Guineas. That seems logical for Godolphin to do that with him.
And he was sort of pulling away from Linebacker there. Do you think that's kind of metaphoric in the sense that you've got Broadsiding a better horse and he'll go on further than Linebacker would?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at all these things, it's just probabilities, right? So if we were to, you know, find a way to express the profile of Broadsiding, so his ratings, number of starts, how he's achieved those ratings, and then compare that to, say, a horse like Linebacker, a horse with the profile of Broadsiding has a higher probability chance of going on to be a Group 1 winner or multiple Group 1 than Linebacker. But obviously there'll still be horses of Linebacker's profile that go on and win Group 1 races as well. There's no absolutes when it comes to horses. They're all individuals. Linebacker's only had – that was just his third start and his first prep, so he's put together a nice profile being a very lightly raced horse. So, you know, it's very likely that his best is still ahead of him. I think he's got tactical speed, which is a big asset in a lot of races. And he clearly has no problem getting 1,600. If we compare him to, say, Traffic Warden, they're both rated very similarly on their best ratings, which was their last start. He's done it, you know, at his third run in his first prep. As I mentioned before, Traffic Warden's had seven starts and two preps. So, again, if you're looking at probabilities about which horse might go on, you'd sort of want to have your money on, and they're offering like an even money bet which horse is going to be the better horse. You'd want to have your money on Linebacker. Historically, horses like him have a much better chance of going on to be top class horses than say Traffic Warden, although, you know, it's not impossible for him to do that as well.
All right, let's move on to the three-year-olds. So here we are. We're in the Australian Guineas, and we've got Southport Tycoon about to march up. And this is actually quite an interesting race because it threw up three of arguably the best three-year-olds we had in that kind of middle-distance classic range. So you've got Southport Tycoon going past V8, and you've also got Riff Rocket coming on here, which was favourite on the day.
Yeah, this was a good race. I mean, obviously the form's worked out well. That's one measure of a race. It doesn't always necessarily mean if the form out of a race is good or bad, that it dictates what that race should be. But in case of that Australian Guineas, it rated well. It was a fast run race. Southport Tycoon sat forward of midfield. It was strong late, quite sort of dominant in the end. I think it was a really good win despite his odds. I think he's a little bit underestimated as a horse. As I said, he sat forward of midfield there in a fast run race, and he ran the best last 600 in the field. Normally in those sort of races, it's your back markers that are running the best last 600, sort of brushing home, even if they don't look like winning. But he did more work than most of the horses and was still faster late and obviously faster overall. So I think that highlights plenty of substance in that win. He went to the Doncaster, was scratched. That was the day they had the 200 mils. We thought the track would be bottomless. Yeah. He'd drawn really wide. The track ended up racing a lot better than what we all thought, but he was scratched from the Doncaster. He then ended up lining up back in trip on a track that All Age Stakes Day, which we just saw with Broadside, which was an absolute bog.
Yeah.
Far worse than Doncaster Day, and he didn't sort of handle that. So
it was just a write-off, really.
The horse really hasn't had, an opportunity to show what he can do after that Australian Guinea. So, going forward to the spring, I'd say he's definitely a horse you don't want to underestimate. He's in the right stable as well with Kieran Maher, just to sort of keep coming on and sort
how
of
airborne's Kieran Maher. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, great story.
We're just outside and then there he trains the first winner over the hurdles at Warrnambool. Yep. It's just
they're a great operation, a lot to admire about the way they run the show there, some of the things they're doing behind the scenes to help them achieve that next level of success with all aspects of the business. So they're definitely setting the standard with a lot of things. Yeah.
All right, we're going to come up to Sydney. We're going to go to the Randwick Guineas. And Mark Sheen, who everyone loves, he said Celestial Legend was his horse to follow out of the spring. A lot of other people thought the same. And this is his third start. It actually won the Hobartville before this. But I'll let you take over from here.
Yeah, so this race, I mean, Celestial Legend, in the spring, everyone was just screaming, this horse needs 1,400. We saw that in the Hobartville. He was super impressive. He came into this race. Look, this is a very, very bunch finish in the Randwick Guineas. To be honest, it didn't rate that highly. You look at the margin there, there's not much more than a length separating most of the field. He did cover a bit of extra ground from memory, and the key point is that he won, right? So he's a winner. He was dominant in the Hobartville. He won this race, and of course he went on to the Doncaster. He's one of the great stories of the autumn that he always, profiled to anyone that knows anything about racing that he needed further than those sprint trips he was running over when I think he ran second to Osmosis at 1,100. And he was beaten a couple of lengths in the Roman Consul behind King's Gambit, always just smashing the line. And now we've started to see the talent and potential that he has.
You got to probably give it to Les. He knew what he was doing. A light spring campaign, light him up for the autumn, and look what happens. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's great stories. I think someone said, 40 years ago he was sort of training winners in the carnival. It's just incredible. So much to admire. And experience counts for a lot. There's a lot of good young trainers, but, you can't forget the old experience heads showing, like Les Bridge, when they get a good horse, they know what to do with them.
Yeah.
We saw not that long ago we had Classique Legend as well, who smashed him in an Everest one year. So,
And Militarized ran second in that race. He really came to the line hard. He's run so well in all these races, Militarized, hasn't he? You sort of have a bit of a personal connection to him with your affiliation with Newgate.
Yep.
But, he tries every single time, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a great colt. I mean, we'll talk about him more and Celestial Legend when we look at the Doncaster. Both two very good three-year-olds. Militarized ran well there, just sort of missed out on the bob of the head. Celestial Legend a bit too good. Was probably a little bit short of, I think, post-race. So maybe thought it was a little bit short of sort of peak condition there. As I said, it was quite a bunch finish in that race. So it's an interesting dynamic that, when you see the form come out of a race, people might look back and say, oh, what a strong race. But as I'm saying, when you just independently measure what they do on a day, there's no way that anyone would consider that race to be super strong just because of the bunch finish and what they did on the clock. And obviously there's been a couple of good runs come out of it, but there's, different circumstances around that.
Mm. Okay, we're going to move to the Rosehill Guineas and the Riff. He's back. Obviously, he was a bit disappointing in the Australian Guineas, but this him, the Rosehill Guineas is a pretty dominant favourite. Looked in a bit of trouble here.
This was a great win. I mean, he was back. The pace wasn't suitable. Nash had to take off sort of very early, sort of before the 800. He was wide. He had nothing to take him into the race. He just sustained excellent sectionals here for that last 800 metres, and his win was more dominant than what that margin suggested. I think he's a really good distance horse. What he has, which a lot of distance horses don't have, is he has sectional ability and turn of foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think yet we've ever really seen him in a race where you can say he's had everything to suit. I mean, even in this race, in the Derby as well, not really ideally suited, but sort of getting the job done. So he's one horse, I think. We're looking at three-year-olds that might make the greatest weight for age horses. He's one horse that could progress to at least be worthy of, you know, competing in those races. Yeah.
So, yeah, you think he's the real deal?
Yeah, look, I'm not saying that he's going to go on and be a multiple Group 1 winner at weight for age or be a Cox Plate contender. But if we're looking at the three-year-olds and picking the horses most likely, he would definitely be one on that list because he has got, you know, that talent sort of from a mile, especially at 2,000 and a little bit further than that. And he has shown the ability to sustain top speed, sectional speed over 800, and he has some acceleration, and they're sort of the traits you need if you're going to start competing at weight for
age. Because he was super impressive at first up over 1,400. You remember when he kind of announced himself back on the scene. Then he finishes his campaign winning over 2,400 metres. So.
Yeah, he's a very good horse. He's a very, very good horse. You know, he was beaten in the Australian Guineas. Just couldn't get momentum at the right time. Certainly no excuse. As we said, Southport Tycoon was really good in that race. But, you know, got to 2,000 here, different type of race. And, yeah, it was, I thought, quite impressive and went on and won the Derby as well. So, yeah, he's definitely a decent horse that we can, you know, look forward to in the spring.
We're going to watch the George Ryder now. It's unusual that you'd be putting the George Ryder in with the three-year-olds, but it was an interesting race this year. I think there was 18 or 19 starters. Usually it's dominated by a weight-for-age star like Animo or Wings or something like that. Anyway, we've got a huge open field today, and we've got V8, the three-year-old, just trucking up to the lead now, going past Think About It.
Yeah, this was a very fast-run 1,500, which is not something we see too often in the weight-for-age races, and he did a really good job. I mean, he's been such a tough and reliable three-year-old. He was racing in Melbourne in a couple of those open age group ones, never beaten far. And, yeah, arguably this was his career best performance and he earned a well-deserved group one win.
Wait for age group one win.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's as I said, there was no loafing there. He sat handy to a strong speed, held off Lady Laguna. We can see there's like a gap back to some of the others. So it was a solid performance. So I don't think, you know, to be honest, I think he sort of lacks the quality to maybe go to that next level and sort of be, you know, consistently winning Group 1 weight for age races. But he's always going to be competitive within that couple of lengths and on his day. It won't surprise me if he bobs up again in one of these types of races. He's just so honest and reliable at a decent rating standard, yeah.
Let's move to the Doncaster, maybe everyone's favourite race of the autumn. It was a fantastic addition this year. Celestial Legend way back in the pack there.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things to point out about this race. Firstly was that it was a brutal speed. This was a very, very fast run. Even by Group 1 standards, they went very quickly early. Celestial Legend was suited by that shape back in the field. He still had to do the job. Got one of the best rides you'll ever see, especially when you watch the overhead. Yeah, incredible ride.
Yeah, just threaded the needle.
Yeah, the way he threaded, anticipated, moved, waited, and so on. He also only had 49 kilos or 49.5, whatever it was. So we've got to remember he was extremely favourably treated at the weights. If we compare there to, say, Militarize, who I think he beat by 0.7 or 0.8, Militarize gave him 5 kilos in weight, sat handy to the fast speed, and was beaten less than a length. So all of those things, I think, add context. They both ran super races in that race. But, yeah, we just got to add that little bit of sort of context. So Celestial Legend's rated around the 100 level, so he still needs to improve if he's to be a Group 1 weight for age horse. I think, yeah, in that race, for example, he's carrying 6.5 kilos less than weight for age. So it's, you know, he really was the perfect handicapper for a race like that, perfectly set up, you know, tuned to perform on the day. In saying all that, what I will say about Celestial Legend is that, as I mentioned, this was a super fast run 1,600-metre race. And he finished his last 200 still well above average. So what that says to me is that Firstly, he's a horse that looks like he still has more to offer. Mm-hmm. Normally in these really fast run races, even the back markers getting home are maybe still running below average splits, but they're just slowing down less than the other horses. Mm. He's a horse still finishing his last 200 much faster than typical standard. So he's definitely got more to give, I think. And it also shows, I think, he'll eat up 2,000 metres. This horse will have no problem going to 2,000. In fact, he may even be better at that trip.
So Cox Plate?
Definitely. I think he's a prime contender for a race like that. In an era where the weight for age ranks are not strong, he's a three-year-old that right at the peak of his powers now. He's built an excellent rating base around the 100 level with signs in his races that he could be better than that. And he's also got that distance angle to sort of step up. So, yeah, he's an exciting horse to look forward to in the spring for sure.
Exciting. Okay, so you talked about three-year-olds going on to win Cox Plates. We're going to watch the Oaks now. And Roger James humbly said that he thought Orchestral would win a Cox Plate. Let's watch the Oaks and see what happens and then talk about her prospects for Cox Plate and also the other horses that were in this race.
Yeah, the thing to point out about this race is it was very, very slowly run. There was a long shot up on the lead in the blue cap there on the inside. Went really slow early and then sort of really started to ramp it up before the 800 and sort of started to string them out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it really was slow to the 800 and then a sprint home. Orchestral, look, she's an interesting one, built this excellent record in New Zealand, had good ratings. I guess this is one of the things of ratings where it helps you to add perspective. When people see her winning a derby by 3-4 lengths and you think, oh, absolute elite superstar. I mean, she wasn't running to those sort of figures, still very, very good. And if she'd run to that derby figure in this race, she would have won this race. But she had 5 runs in New Zealand before she came here. The last 2 of those, I think it was a 2,100 metre lead up and then the derby itself were both strongly run staying races. And that's where she really shone, I think, in that sort of staying element. She outstayed her rivals. Her engine was far too big for them. So she came off those 5 runs, 2 of them, you know, strongly run staying races, came here. Won the Vinery in a slowly run race, sort of regressed a little bit off her rating and we thought that she might be able to elevate with the benefit of that run. But, yeah, she went backwards a little bit again in this run, still ran, you know, quite admirably. Mm. But perhaps she'd just sort of gone over the top and was sort of not right at the sort of peak of her powers. So, yeah, Autumn Angel was a little bit more forward than the other two and was strongest late, so well and truly earned her win. Zardozi just left too much to do from the 800.
Yeah.
Her last 800 was the best in the race by about 0.8 over the winner. But, you just can't give them 11 lengths in a race where they go slow to the 800 and think you're going to win. Mm-hmm. So I think she ran quite well. It's possible she was just a run behind this prep. I always sort of had the impression that she was maybe just a run short. Mm-hmm. We saw in the Vinery she loomed up and looked like she might beat Orchestral that day and just sort of peaked late. And similar in this race, just left too much to do. Ran a really good 800, but again, just sort of peaked late. So, so I think a pretty good race with the sort of top three having, you know, reasonable prospects to go forward in the spring.
Yeah. Because they're talking Melbourne Cups, Caulfield Cups with Zardozi, Cox Plates with Orchestral. Autumn Angel would, you know, they'd probably be aiming to all that. Do you think they're up to that, or do you think they're a bit ambitious?
Look, Cox Plate for Orchestral, I mean, again, she could certainly go to that race and she wouldn't be out of place in it. Mm-hmm. Do I think she could win a Cox Plate? Probably not. Mm-hmm. I actually think, you know, Caulfield Cup's probably a better target for her because of the way she won the Derby, as I mentioned, how fast run staying races, and that's where, you know, her stamina sort of really shone. So, I think, you know, maybe Caulfield Cup. But, look, wouldn't surprise to see her line up in a Cox Plate and run well. It's not a strong era. Zardozi, probably Caulfield Cup as well. Sort of talking about Melbourne Cup, I'd be very surprised if she lined up in the first Tuesday in November as a top flight Melbourne Cup chance. As I said, maybe she was just a run short this prep. She could be a bit better in the spring as well. So maybe a race like the Caulfield Cup for her.
Mm. But just before we finish the 3-year-olds off, we've got a question. We put a shout out to all you good folk out there asking questions. We've got some great questions. Here's one of them. Where do the 5 retiring 3-year-old colts rate in comparison to each other based on their previous race records? We're talking about King's Gambit, Militarize, Osmosis, Cylinder, and Shinzo.
Well, that's an interesting question because there's all different points you could take from them, right? None of them were the dominant superstar colt. They all sort of had their day. I guess Shinzo obviously won the Golden Slipper, which is a major race, rated quite well, like very solid with sort of typical Golden Slipper winners. Militarized was super impressive in the size and the champagne. He had no luck in the slipper. Osmosis, emerged as unbeaten two-year-old and sort of won the Coolmore. In that race, he led and was stronger than anything through the line, so it was quite a dominant win. King's Gambit showed enormous sort of promise as a two-year-old. It was a very good run in the slipper behind Shinzo. He was sort of back and wide and loomed up. And then Shinzo and Cylinder just had the softer runs on the inside that day and he sort of petered on his run a bit. I think he was a very talented horse that just sort of never quite put it all together on the track, a little bit like his sire, I'm Invincible, in some respects. Cylinder was a super consistent type, not beaten too far in an Everest, and then we saw he was really good in the Newmarket with the benefit of, I think it was 51.5 he carried. So, look, they're all really good colts on their day. As I said, we saw Militarize. He was not far away in a Cox Plate, given an ordinary steer. Really good in the Doncaster. If he had been, level weights with, say, Celestial Legend, then I dare say it's a different result. So they're all really good colts for different reasons. I don't think you could say there's sort of a standout.
Because none of them were able to really put the nail in the coffin and win that big weight for age race over the something like that and really assert themselves as the number one. They were all performing well, but none of them really stood up and said,
that's right. I mean,
one.
They all had their day. Like, Shinzo won the Golden Slipper, which is a very important race, but then he was safely held by Osmosis in the Coolmore as a three-year-old, which is another very important race. Militarize was a two-time Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and come back and won the Golden Rose. He's the only, I think he's the only horse to win two Group 1s as a two-year-old and then win the Golden Rose. And I think he's maybe the only second horse to win second colt to win a Group 1 and come back and win the Golden Rose as a Group 1. The other was the Autumn Sun, who won the JJ Atkins. So, there's a lot to like about him as well. We'll leave it up to the breeders and the people with mares to work out which are the more appealing. But, I think it's fair to say that they all had their day in the sun and sort of built their profile up. I think Militarize was sort of the one with the most substance. Like when I look at, his ability to absorb, fast pace, high pressure and run well, run time like they did in the Doncaster, that's the second fastest race up to a mile in Australia behind Pride of Jenny's All-Star Mile. And he's up there, close to that speed, carrying quite a bit of weight and still there fighting out the finish. We saw him run well in a Cox Plate. To me, he just sort of had that, quality and substance beyond the sort of sprinting ranks. So, anyone's personal opinion, you can make a case for all those colts, and I'm sure the breeders will do that in their marketing. Yeah. Mm.
You never know. One of those colts might service this next horse we're going to talk about, Imperatriz. Mm. We're moving to the sprinters. I'm going to start with the Lightning.
Cylinders all coiled
and
up, and
this was, she came back, she won. Private Eye pushed her really, really hard. But I think everyone started to say, okay, maybe she's just come back half a length or a length off the dynamite that she was in the spring.
This was a really slowly run 1,000-metre race. They jogged to the 400 and then sort of dashed home. So at the time we thought you probably couldn't have done much more. When a race is a full test over the distance of sort of speed, that's where talent tends to shine out more. Mm-hmm. If they're going to hold up and jog for 400, or sprint for 400, there's a lot of horses that can, they're more evenly matched. As it turned out, she was, a shade off that best we saw from the spring. She still put together, a series of 104, 105 ratings, which is very good. Mm. She won again after this. So, look, her record's phenomenal. We saw she sort of came to the end of it. Things didn't go her way in Sydney. She probably underperformed a little bit against expectations there. But, still a super mare that provided, a lot of highlights, especially here in the den.
She's going to be sold up in Magic Millions. Mm. They're talking $5 million. Mm. This is a question without notice. If you had to send it to a stallion, this stallion season later in the year, who would you send it to?
Oh, look, probably not my area of expertise, to be honest. I have not really much idea about stallion and mare matings and things like that. I could, say a stallion just because I like that horse's prospects as a stallion, and then, people with expertise in that area would laugh you out of the room. So, sure. So it'd be interesting to see what she sells for.
You see John Stewart's everyone's new best mate. You know, John Stewart, the guy who bid on the Wings.
Going to buy the Wings filly. Yeah,
yeah. He reckons he wants to buy her too. So
okay, yeah, that's interesting. I mean,
that'll push her along.
You have to think maybe Yulong will be front runners to get her. And
John Stewart doesn't like getting beat. Maybe Debbie from the clouds.
I don't know, but Yulong seemed to buy most of the really high priced mares to go to their broodmare batch, but. Yeah, I mean, as with all these great mares that leave the track, they get sold for a lot of money and then we wait to see their sort of progeny. So far, it's probably been a little bit disappointing, but that's the hit and miss of the breeding game. I mean, one thing I do know is that being, you know, a good mare is important from a broodmare perspective, but, yeah, I mean, it's so hit and miss that, being a champion mare doesn't mean you're going to be a champion broodmare.
Invariably, they don't throw things, do they?
That's for sure. You look at Maccabi Diva and Black Caviar and Sunline and, you know, all those mares.
That's why Winx would be interesting. I mean, she was so exceptional, Winx, that maybe she'll be different. But generally speaking, you know, the $10 million Winx filly, she's probably not going to be that good. But.
Yeah, probably more trophy and sort of emotional thing than anything. And good luck to her. I mean, that was great theatre itself.
It was fantastic.
You were out there.
Yeah, so. It was an amazing day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great for racing.
All right, we're going to push the sprinters along. We're going to go straight through to the TJ. Really crack a field. We've got Imperatrix back there. Bella Nipotina. Chain of Lightning out in front.
What I will say is I think, to be brutally honest, this is probably the weakest bunch of sprinters I can remember in Australia at the moment. In a long, long time, when you think back about all the great sprinters we've had in the decades. A decade plus, this TJ Smith has been pretty much every single year an elite world-class sprint race, almost without fail, I would say. It's probably the single highest rating race in our calendar, if I was to take a guess. I haven't looked. I think the average is around 109, which, as I said, is elite world class. This year, Chain of Lightning ran like 103, which is 2.6 lengths below the average.
Yeah.
So if you look at that bunch of horses there, I think I wrote in my notes here, so there were 7 horses within 1.1 lengths at the finish there. Since 2010, the range of the 7th horse beaten is between 4.6 and 9 lengths. So this is the only, so normally the 7th horse has beaten 4.5 lengths or more, and this year the 7th horse is only 1.1. So that says a lot when you line it up with also what happened on the clock. I think at the moment we're in the midst of probably our weakest crop of sprinters of that I can remember. I wish I Win was there. I mean, he won the TJ last year in a very good rating, held up the sort of history of that race, just a little bit below the average, but still very good. He was nowhere near that level here. He's obviously, we don't know exactly, but he must have issues, that horse. They seem to be managing him very carefully, fragile or, you know, whatever it is, to manage his racing, because normally you wouldn't think you'd want to go into a race like this first up. And the fact that he ran so well first up is probably speaks volumes to the talent that we know he has. But, yeah, he looks to be, we'll see what he does in Queensland, if maybe he will elevate to those levels. But yeah, it's the landscape is definitely set for a changing of the guard in the sprinters for new talent to emerge. So
everyone wanted a changing the guard. Estriella, let's watch Estriella in the Sunlight Stakes. Very impressive this day. We know that she ran in the Sangster on Saturday. Wasn't super impressive. What do we make of Estriella? I'll let you talk through this run first and tell us where you think we're going with her.
This was a super win. I mean, just sustained speed from the front. Again, I mean, what she did in the Sangster, 200 doesn't diminish what she did on this day. We measure each performance independently. And there's no doubt that this day was very good. It was something like 102.3 on my scale, which is probably a length off group one weight for age open to sprinters at the moment. Went to the Sangster, was up on the lead again, another fast speed, and just sort of couldn't sustain it. So I think she still ran, you know, reasonably well. So I think what she's done now is established a range between her previous ratings and this run that sort of puts her at a, you know, solid sort of group class level, but not right at that group one level.
Yes.
And that's often the way you're trying to look at horses, is establish what their range of performance is.
Yep.
They're not machines. They don't run to the same level every time. They're not like race cars or anything like that. So what you're always trying to do is, establish what the range of a horse is, allowing for some potential upside. So she's now built a profile of that sort of range. So it'll be interesting to see if she can come back and exceed that and perhaps move her upper limit sort of a little bit higher. She's in the right stable to do that. Kira Mara again has a great record of just bringing horses along and getting them to improve as sort of older horses. For the moment, she didn't stamp herself as the next big thing in the sprinting ranks.
She's only a 3-year-old too, isn't she? So she's still still potential. She's only three.
100%.
A lot of growing and maturing.
Yeah, a lot of growing, maturing. Who knows, by the time the Sangster come around, maybe, she was a little bit past her best. Horses can't tell you that beforehand. You only work it out afterwards. So, she's a very promising sprinting filly. This performance here still ranks her as the best three-year-old filly that we have across all distances, narrowly ahead of some of the others. So as I said, one, run a little bit below doesn't necessarily diminish what happened in the previous runs. We need to look at horses as, more dynamic than that. I liken a little bit to like cricketers. So a bloke might average 30, then if he comes out and hits 100 one day, doesn't necessarily mean that, you expect them to get 100 next time. So, I like to look at it that way because that's a comparative sport where entrants step out multiple times to try and achieve a personal best and have varying levels of performance and horses are the same. So you need to always keep that in mind. As analysts and punters, you're always trying to establish where a horse is and what their range might be and lining that up with the conditions of the upcoming race and forecasting what they might run to.
All right, let's have a bit of a chat about the Everest. All roads lead to the Everest. Stu Ferenczi, one of the great blokes on the den, fired this question in. You might laugh or you might love it. Bustling, the WA two-year-old that won the Karrakatta Plate.
Yep.
Very impressive in the Karrakatta Plate. Any chance it could line up in an Everest as a three-year-old?
Could, yeah. It was very impressive that day. Ran some really slick figures on the clock, put margin on the field there. He's fairly lightly raced. I think it was only his fourth start. It's going to be interesting. Like, what are they going to do with him? He definitely showed the talent there that he could be over in the East and running in the big races in the spring. So whether that's going to happen or not, or whether he's going to be kept at home, I don't know. But, if we're looking for two-year-olds that might become three-year-olds that could line up in the Everest, he has to be somewhere in the conversation. You'd obviously like to see him do that again or something similar just to sort of confirm that level of talent. I think I've got him off that performance like the highest rated two-year-old in Western Australia, like in the last sort of 8 to 10 years or something.
Wow. Okay, that's big. Yeah, right.
So he won that race on my figures 98.5, which puts him just on the borderline of the top 10 two-year-olds in Australia. Amelia's Jewel ran, I think, 97.2 to win the same race. So it's different type of horse. He's a pure sprinter, but he showed a serious level of talent winning that race. So it's not definitely not a silly question. So he's, as I said, he's his fourth run now. He's sort of up and running. So it'd be interesting to see what they do if they want to bring him for the spring. Is he, has he gone out for a spell already? I haven't looked.
Storm Boy, do you think they'd run Storm Boy in an Everest?
No, I think he'll be more looking as a three-year-old, like 1400, 1600.
Okay.
And who knows, whether he'd be 2,000 meter horse, I'm not sure. But he even, when he was running as a two-year-old in the Autumn and Magic Millions, he always appealed like more than 1200 would be his absolute best trip. I don't think we'll see him line up in an Everest.
And just quickly, so your role with Newgate have a slot in the Everest. Do you have much to do with trying to help them decide who they want to put in their slot?
Yeah, look, I'm just there to provide an independent opinion. So last year we sort of did that, locked in a horse early. So with Henry and his partners, they're basically looking for me for an opinion on the way that I do things, and then they take that into account with their stuff. They're all, such a smart group of operators, all those people involved in that, a lot of admiration and respect for what they do and the way they go about things. So, got a result last year, which was great.
Just jogging people's memory. So think about it. And you hadn't locked in, think about it, at the comparative stage last year because you locked him in after the Doomben 10,000? Or was it just before the Doomben 10,000?
I can't remember. It might have been just before that. I can't remember. But basically the question was asked at the time, I Wish I Win and Giga Kick were the two sort of dominant sprinters. And the question thrown around was that if we couldn't lock in either of those two, who would be the next horse that we'd want to lock in for an Everest? And he was the recommendation. And I think there was a really good fit there with some other things they were looking at. I believe he was raised on Newgate Farm, which is a very important thing. I know from like a breeders and racehorse perspective, a lot of people believe that the quality of a farm that a horse is raised on has a lot to do with their future talent and potential. So they obviously did a deal to lock him in and got the result on the day, which was great for everyone involved, including, I guess, the owners of Think About. I think it was a syndicate with Proven Thoroughbreds. yeah, the sort of stuff that dreams are made of, I guess. So, yeah, so this year I guess it'll be a similar thing.
Yeah, you're trying to get ahead of the game.
Yeah, it looks very hard this year. As I said, like it is yeah, very even playing field where it's almost like, you know, if they run sprint race, at a top-level sprint race every week, they'd almost take turns just depending on track conditions,
yeah,
pace, position in running, track pattern, bit of luck and all of those sort of things. There's so many horses that could bob up on any given day and win. I Wish I Win, Sunshine in Paris, Magic Time, Espiona, yeah, Chain of Lightning, Bella Nipotina.
Do you have a number one seed, number one, number two seed?
Honestly couldn't, to be honest, yeah, yeah, because of the reason I just said, that they just, it's like they take turns. You know, it really is a scenario where it's ripe for some new talent to emerge, for something to come out and put one or two big performances on the board and go, I'm going to be the top dog in the sprinting ranks or the top yeah, the top filly mare. So it's going to be interesting to follow, especially as we, you know, a little bit way on now, but getting to August and some of these two-year-olds come back as three-year-olds. We see races like the Vane Stakes, which is an early race in Melbourne,
yeah,
where a horse like Bivouac emerged from being
a kick.
Yeah, like...
No, I think it was the Dane Hill, yeah.
Yeah, like, say, I remember Bivouac was just like a good two-year-old, like solid lower group class two-year-old, and then just come out and exploded in the Vane Stakes,
yeah,
and yeah, sort of announced himself as a really good elite-level sprinter. So... yeah, I'll be looking for something like that to happen because, to be honest, we need it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say, like, the landscape can change so much in 6 months, right? And this takes us in, we're going to start talking about middle distance horses now. And it was only about 6 months ago that Pride of Jenny just got beat by Amelia's Jewel at the Valley. You remember that? That was, everyone forgets that.
Yep.
And look at her now, she's the horse of the year. Like, I think everyone agrees that she's going to win it.
Think so, yeah.
But let's start talking about middle distance. So we're going to start with that very elegant Stakes, Fangirl.
Yeah, so I think she was $1.30 here. She won the Apollo, like absolutely bolted in, slow run race, just trucked up under a hold and just blew them away. Then she got to this race, was left a bit of work to do there. Still ran well, but to be honest, Think It Over, it was. It's easy to get them mixed up, Think About It, Think It Over. Think It Over just went like a rocket. Great ride by Nash, and you know, he's sort of holding her there at the end, so he well and truly earned that win. She rated a little bit below her best, but yeah, the run before in the Apollo, what she did,
blew everyone away, didn't it?
Yeah, when she won the King Charles as well, she was ultra impressive. You know, arguably should have been right in the finish of the Cox Plate as well with even luck. Yeah, and had a little bit of a setback after this race, and we sort of haven't seen her again. So,
and so did Think It Over as well.
Yeah, so he's gone now. I mean, a remarkable story, that horse. I mean, won the Queen Elizabeth a couple of years ago and then had a massive amount of time off racing and come back and winning these sort of Group 1 races. So, he's now sort of done. But, yeah, Fangirl, very, very good horse. Hopefully we get to see her come back because she was also going to be one of the pin-up horses of the autumn. And unfortunately, sort of after this race went by the wayside.
Yeah, and it would have been interesting to see her in the mix with Pride of Jenny and whatnot. But let's move to the All-Star Mile.
Second place, Buffalo.
This was kind of emerged Pride of Jenny. Obviously, she'd already won a couple of great races in the springtime and whatnot. But here she is. She's out in front. Willow kind of maybe went to sleep or maybe didn't. You can talk with much more authority on this. But yeah, she just got too far in front, and that was it.
This was seriously good sustained speed of the mile. Really high rating performance. As I touched on earlier, it's like the highest time rating race at up to a mile in Australia, includes all the sprint races. The time raters will know sort of what I'm talking about there. A lot of controversy over Mr. Brightside and where he settled and things like that. I was one of the people on the front foot saying that it made no difference at all.
I remember that.
The way I do things, he had every possible chance to do better on that day when you look and break down sectionals and different approaches. So talk that I should have set it closer was just ludicrous in my opinion. I don't think it made any difference to the result. It was just pure sustained speed at a really high level from Pride of Drenny at probably what is her optimum distance at this stage of 1600. So one of the real highlights to see her do that for me.
And she was in the head of all the trainers and jockeys at this stage, wasn't she? They don't know what to do with her. And we're going to watch the entire of the Queen Elizabeth Stakes in a couple of races time. But let's move along. Let's go to the Aranvet and the emergence of Via Sistina. So there she is out the back about to circle the field and go bang.
Yeah, this was they really walked in this race. It was kind of like barrier trial pace and she sat off them and ran elite sectionals to do this. I think at the time I wrote, I only had Winx running a faster last 600 rating.
Incredible.
It's important to note with those things that the early pace does present the opportunity for good horses to reel off elite sectionals, and they did go very, very slow in that race. But, you know, at least in her running that figure, she showed that she has the turn of foot and acceleration of a very good horse. We kind of knew that because her overseas form was very good and her ratings from over there. And this race, I guess, confirmed that she'd travelled out here well, settled in well with Chris Waller, was able to go out there and sort of do it on the track. Her win was, yeah, to be honest, a lot more dominant than that margin suggests, given how slow they went. And
which
the
was
start
down too, wasn't
yeah,
she?
And she just did it so easily and wasn't entitled to win that comfortably from where she was, given how slow they went.
So if Fangirl was in that race, do you think the result's still the same?
Probably. I mean, Fangirl's, you know, has an electric turn of foot as well. You know, this was at 2,000. Fangirl probably had no problem with that, given how slowly they went. So, I mean, you probably have to still give an edge to Via Sistina, but they probably would have made their runs together, I'd say, because, Fangirl is a mare that, when you look at sectional stuff, has some pretty slick figures in her history too.
All right, let's move on to the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. So just before you play it for a minute, let's just sort of talk through things. So everyone starts talking about Via Sistina. I felt like kind of people just had forgotten about Pride of Jenny. She was like, they were like, she's not that good a horse. She had Mr. Brightside as well, who's obviously a very, very accomplished horse.
Yep.
And it felt like it was just Via Sistina versus everybody else.
Yeah.
And the way it kind of panned out is that exactly. And everyone forgot about Pride of Jenny, and then what happened is what's now. We're going to watch the whole race. We've got plenty of time to unpack it.
Yeah.
Away you go, Trill Mitt.
Yeah, what we have to remember is before this race, Pride of Jenny had gone to 2,000 in the Australian Cup and was run down by Cascadian. I mean, it ran very bravely, ran fast in front, but just got grabbed in the last couple of strides by Cascadian.
But ridden much more patiently by Declan Bates in the Australian Cup than she was in this race, right?
Yeah, I mean, she still set a very fast speed in the Australian Cup. In this race, she went a little bit faster, but not massively faster, and that's where the unpacking of this race happens. That it looked like, you know, she's gone at absolute warp speed here.
Okay, so just to stop you, but like right now, what should the jockeys behind her should be doing here? Is this the moment when they should have got going?
Well, they just need to be keeping that gap, right? I'm not sure what the gap is there, but
it's 10, 12 lengths, maybe.
Yeah, it's probably more. Yeah, it's expanding now, but they needed to keep the gap to around that 15 length mark.
Yeah,
to let it get out to 30 lengths.
Yeah, so here she's just really getting away.
It's too late now.
So the race is over.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so. Yeah, so the way this, at the time watching it, you just couldn't believe it, right? You thought that surely she's going to stop.
But it was Pride of Jenny. I remember saying to myself, well, it's Pride of Jenny, right? She's got an over.
And then, when she wins by the space she does, you just stand and applaud. One of the more remarkable things we've ever seen on a racetrack, and we've all, both of us included, have watched a lot of racing over a couple of decades now. But, the way this race played out, I mean, she was essentially in her own race, obviously.
And so when you're watching this, you're like, it's over, she's home here? You thought there's no hope?
She keeps I would going, say probably by the 300, I thought it was over. It's sort of a little bit hard to tell until you see them straighten up like this.
Yeah.
Pretty much by about there, the 300, you think, it's over. So she was running along at a very fast speed. But the others being like 30 lengths behind, they were in their own race, like in a jog and sprint weight for age race.
And there you can see the other race finishing now. Via Sistina, too good for more. Cascading comes on.
Mr. Brightside there. So if you rule out Pride of Jenny, I mean, those other horses have run, you know, group one weight for age race where they've jogged to the 600 and then sprinted home. That's like, they just went way too slow.
Yeah.
She went very fast, but they just went way too slow. And so I think that's, you know, it really was two separate races. I don't think you can look at that race and say Pride of Jenny won by 6.5, so she's 6.5 lengths better than those other horses. I think the jockeys made a grave error in their judgment. And going on what you're saying before, I think in some respects they were psyched out. There was this sort of, you know, narrative around Mr. Brightside sitting too close in the Australian Cup. He was, according to some, too far back in the All-Star Mile. And then they tried to write him more positive, and then he ran even worse in the Australian Cup. So he was too close. You can't sit too close to Pride of Jenny. And then no one wanted to do it. I mean, Craig Williams was adamant he was just going to ride, you know, to suit Mr. Brightside, and nothing else took up the running. And all of a sudden she's 30 lengths in front. And they're all just jogging along at a slow speed. And as I said, by the time they got to the 1,200, it was over. It's too late then. Yeah, I mean, you can't make a 1,200-metre run on a horse. They needed to be more proactive early and not necessarily sitting right up her hammer, but not letting the margin blow out to what it did. So I think if you did the maths for people that look at times and sectionals, if you look at the time that Pride of Jenny ran was like 1:22, which wasn't a great time, to be honest. I mean, she was walking late.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If they were within 15 lengths, I think we see a different race, to be brutally honest. I know that's not, you know, following the cheer squad mentality sort of about her, but it's just trying to look at it completely objectively. But yeah, I think her reputation kind of psyched them out, and that's full credit to the horse just for having that engine and things like that. But yeah, if you take where the others were at the 800 and the overall time she ran, the figures they needed to run home from the 800, virtually impossible to do. So it was just, it was one of the more bizarre things I've ever seen.
Christine is a world-class racehorse. She's very, very
good. Yeah, she's very good. She had, you know, good group one form overseas. I think she'll prove that here in time. But yeah, you just can't give 30 lengths to a horse who's still running to a very good level. So yeah, as I said, I've never seen anything like it on a racetrack before. We've seen tearaway leaders, but never in a scenario where the horse is chasing or actually going at a very slow speed. Yeah, that's what was quite unique about that race. But yeah, it's one of those races now that'll be replayed for decades to come and always spoken about whenever there's a horse that, you know, goes away. We always talk about Vaux Rogue. Sure. Now Pride of Jenny will be sort of talked about when we see a horse lead by a big margin. We'll be talking about, you know, Pride of Jenny tactics. So, I mean, it's great.
Yeah, so that hypothetical for you, let's say Vistina lines up in the Cox Plate. Pride of Jenny's in it. She's in great form. J-Mac calls you and says, mate, Dano, how do I beat Pride of Jenny in the Cox Plate? What's your instructions to him?
Well, look, that's an interesting one because Via Sistina is a horse that I believe from her overseas sort of form and the view of connections and the trainer there that she does need to find her feet a bit early. So I think it's more about the structure of a race. In this race, Lindemann was a late scratching on race morning. He was a horse that was probably going to go forward. And for all intents and purposes, he probably would have been the one that, you know, kept that margin to 10 or 15 lengths type of thing. Mm-hmm. And the others just would have tracked up behind him as normal racing pattern. Yeah. But without a horse to do that, they've all just held their mounts. So, it's going to be one of the great things of the spring to come back and see these horses clash when they, you know, get to a race like 2,000 in a Cox Plate. It's just going to be great theatre to see Pride of Jenny, you know, coming down past the school or whatever, 15 in front or something, you know. I mean, kind of like the cleaner. I mean, the cleaner sort of tried to do that. He didn't have the overall quality of like a Pride of Jenny. It's going to be great for racing. And, yeah, she's been a phenomenal story.
And she's your horse of the year?
I think she's earned it, yeah. I mean, you've got to remember the spring as well. She came out and
won
the
group ones.
Yeah, the champions mile, I think it was. And
she won the Empire Rose.
Yeah, the Empire Rose. Mile, yeah. Those rated really strongly. She came out, won the All-Star Mile, again, really high rating race, and then she's won the Queen Elizabeth, which is the Cox Plate of the autumn effectively. Mm. So, I don't know how you can deny her that title.
So the mare's only races in this division were kind of dominated by Zugotcha and a Tissue. They fought it out in the Queen of the Turf Stakes. Yep. We're going to watch that now.
So Zugotcha had a great prep, benefited from some good draws and her tactical speed. In this race, she sat just in behind the lead there, beautiful run. Just sort of clear as they're all getting off the fence and just super honest and reliable, just drove to the front. And Tissue was the, you know, arguably a little bit unlucky. He's definitely the better run in the race. But this is the trade-off between horses that have tactical speed and spend the energy to put themselves and horses that are a bit more conservative and sort of settle back. You can't have everything in racing. You can't bludge early and then expect that you're just going to get afforded all the luck that the on-pacers get. In my opinion, horses that do the work early to find that position, they earn the right to get that little bit of luck or have less bad luck. So great race of Tissues, going really well this prep. Had a great spring as well. So she's a very, very good mare. I think she's a better mare than Zugotcha, but yeah, just that lower percentage sort of run style makes her a little bit more vulnerable to pace and luck in running and things like that. But Zugotcha, great preparation.
And Waller's got both of them. You know, obviously just Yeah.
Great for the stable to sort of try and see what happens with them during the spring. No doubt it's his shoe head back down to Melbourne.
Yep. She loves it.
Loves it there, loves Slamington.
Yeah.
Both two very, very good mares. Zugotcha, as I said, I think she, you know, won maybe three races this prep or something. I know one might have been first up. She easily accounted for Lady Laguna, and we know how good Lady Laguna was going. Yeah, I think she came off that race and then ran in the second to V8 there. So all the form around them is good. Yeah, just good quality mares, I think. A
couple of questions to finish off the middle distance section. So we had that really nice moment when Territory Express won the Midway Championships final, trainer Paul Nisfarot, been in bad health, but Territory Express won like an absolute motor car that day.
Yeah.
Question from Jordan, who's one of the good blokes on the den. Territory Express, is it a serious racehorse? He's got that key attribute of a lethal turn of foot. Can he win a Hollandale or a Doomin Cup? What's his limit? Group horse, question mark.
I think he's a good horse. Can he win a Doomin Cup? Probably not.
Yeah.
I don't think he's that good, to be honest. It looks like being quite a decent Doomin Cup, like 100 plus from a rating
Cascadian's heading up, isn't it?
Yeah, Cascadian. Well, he's even better if he gets a fast pace. He can, you know, we saw him run down Pride of Jenny in the Australian Cup. You know, you got Huerta, who was really impressive, winning first up. He's going to go there, try and win the Doomin Cup 3 years in a row. Annabelle Neesham had a nice horse win. Mighty Ulysses won over 1,600 up there. UK horse. He's going to be up there as well in the Hollandale and probably the Doomben Cup. So, yeah, I think they're probably, you know, two lengths above where Territory Express is at the moment. But, yeah, he's a nice horse, good horse. I'd think that he could probably win something like, you know, like a Group 3 handicap race sort of thing. Yeah, I don't think he's a Group 1 weight for age horse, but definitely lower group class handicap races. I think he's really well placed. Yeah.
Very good question on ratings. Apart from Winx, would you be able to explain the weekly phenomenon of horses not maintaining their figure, losing a leg, or suddenly improving 100 lengths in a year, like Pride of Jenny?
Look, that's an interesting one. I guess human nature is that we notice the exceptions or the outliers, right? So we notice the Pride of Jenny's improving. We notice the Storm Boy's not running up to big figures, and there's been lots of other cases like that. Shelby 66 is jumping out of the ground. So I'll say that a couple of things. One, as a percentage of the overall racing population, they're so small. Like there's, you know, 27,000 horses a year race or something like that, right? So I don't think there's anything to it. I think it's just natural anomaly and we just tend to notice it more often. Horses aren't machines. There's, you know, so much has to go right for horses to turn up and produce their best on a given day, not only physically within the horse but also in the makeup and how races run and things like that. So we have been a little bit spoilt over, you know, the last decade or a bit more with the likes of Black Caviar and Winx and some other horses like that that have just been, you know, super consistent performers. Nature Strips may be a great example of, you know, proves that horses aren't machines. I mean, he was a horse that, you know, was maligned a lot for, you know, being absolute world-class elite on his day and then, you know, gone at the 200 on other days.
Yeah.
So he's a great example that, you know, to prove that horses aren't machines. So, yeah, I think you just need to be a bit more flexible in your views and always leave it open that there will, if you watch enough racing over enough amount of time, there will always be outliers. There will always be horses like Pride of Jenny that go from just being, you know, sort of lower level competitive group class to being like group one, multiple group one winners when they're 5 and 6 years old. And there'll be horses that come out and look like they're well beaters and then for some explainable reason just drop off the face of the earth in terms of their performances. So that's the nature of racing. It's chaotic in that way. It's uncertain. And that's one of the reasons we love it is because whenever there's a race, especially a good race, you just never know what's going to happen or what might emerge.
Outstanding. Right. To finish off, the stayers. Stayers are never as strong in the autumn because it's all about staying in the spring. But we get a little bit of a taste and a bit of an idea of what might happen in the Melbourne Cup. We're going to watch two races. We're going to watch the Sydney Cup to start with and then watch the Roy Higgins from Flemington. Let's start with the Sydney Cup.
And this was quite a remarkable win by Circle of Fire. I mean, he was wide, he raced keenly, he pulled a bit. You thought at the 800, there's no way you could back him. I'd love to have known his price trading in Betfair. The fact that this horse just kept surging on, was challenged at the 200, and then you just look here, like he's pulling away from them again at the line. Yeah, I know this wasn't a Melbourne Cup, but you very, very rarely see that in a race. to have a horse do that over 3,200 race-wide, expend extra energy, and still be surging away late. And this was no jog and sprint race. That was a genuine 3,200. They ran along at quite a good speed in that race. So, yeah, he's lightly raced. I think he's, you know, it's pointless making Melbourne Cup predictions this far out. I mean, this time last year, you know, or not too far past here, we're talking about White Marlin and other horses. I think you might have been the end of him. But there's so much water to go under the bridge for these horses to even make the race, let alone line up as genuine chances. But, yeah, that was a serious staying performance from that horse. So it'll be exciting to see him come back. He, as I said, he's still lightly raced. Stayers tend to develop more with more racing and seasoning. And, yeah, that was definitely something very rare we saw in that Sydney Cup.
So. What is your favourite race of the year?
That's a good question. I mean, historically it's always been the Cox Plate. I mean, I came into racing the mid-90s, so it was that era of Octagonal, Saintly, Volante, you know, Nothing Like a Dane, closely followed by the likes of Sunline and Northerly and Might and Power and all those horses. So, so for me it's always been the Cox Plate, I'd have to say, yeah.
We're trying to set up a den at Moonee Valley. So awesome. Stay tuned. That could happen. We're working hard to get a den at the Valley.
Cox Plate day would be amazing.
That'd be epic.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, mate, to finish off, let's look at the Roy Higgins, Mark Twain. Yep. Wow, was this a finishing section? Look at that. It's basically last, way out the back there.
Yeah, very good win. I mean, the horse can obviously stay. Yeah, very good. Very, very good sections. Looks in an impossible position. Just keeps surging.
Still looks impossible.
Yeah. I mean, it's just there's two ways to look at this sort of performance, in my opinion. The strength of sectionals and things like that's phenomenal. The horse can obviously stay. For me, I'm always a little bit negative on horses that, you know, struggle to get themselves in the race and are just sort of getting there late, like he was, you know what I mean? Obviously, once he gets to 3,200 might be sort of different, but I think he's in the Melbourne Cup now.
He'll definitely
stay 3,200 metres. But yeah, I mean, I'll be surprised.
Great name too.
Oh, super name. I'll be surprised if that's
so you're taking Circle of Fire over Mark Twain.
Yeah, I would take Circle of Fire over him, to be honest. But yeah, interesting in those colours. OTI had a horse win, I think it was in France, just in the last couple of days. He's a 4-year-old, so he's still relatively early. Northern Hemisphere 4-year-old won very impressively in a race over there, just a lower level race, but looks a real prospect, and I believe he's coming to the Melbourne Cup as well. So early look there. Yeah, promising horse off that win anyway, as far as we can tell here. But, that's the greatness of the Melbourne Cup. I mean, it's hard to resist talking about it at any stage. But we obviously have to accept that, there's so much to order to go under the bridge,
Mate, we've done it. We've got to the end. It's been a marathon, but it's been outstanding.
Yeah. Always good talking about good horses.
It is. Yeah, it's fun. So, awesome. Thank you for watching, and there's still a lot of good racing coming up. We've got a great carnival in Adelaide in the midst of it. We've got great racing up in Brisbane. Then we'll have a little bit of a spell, and then it is all on for the spring. I can guarantee you that the den is going to be all over the Sydney and Melbourne spring carnivals like never before.
Going to be huge.
Long live the great game, and we'll see you very soon.